Welcome back to the Gardening with Joy and Holly radio show. Happy you are with us today. Time for garden questions and answers. If you've got a question, we've got an answer for you. You can send your question on over, gardentalkradio@gmail.com. That's gardentalkradio@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call toll-free coast-to-coast at 1-800-927-7468. 1-800-927-SHOW. That's S-H-O-W. Had a number of questions come in this week. See what we can get through to the top of the hour, Holly.
Yeah, so the first one is, how long do you leave your grow lights on for?
We leave ours from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 12 hours on, 12 hours off. There is some variations based on specific type of plants, but we're just starting onions, peppers, leeks, and some brassicas. So that's just a good recommendation. You can go 10 on and 12 and 14 off, somewhere in that range. I wouldn't leave them off any longer than 12 hours on that end. And you don't have to have, we talked about this, you don't have to have a grow light.
No, you don't. But
if you don't have a grow light, what is your options? Invest in a grow light, or
you can put it in you can put your plants in a south facing window, which is most ideal. Otherwise, a west facing window is good too.
We've done that.
Rotate the plants around so they don't get leggy, which means like they have too long of a stalk, or
they reach for the light, yeah, and get very weak stemmed, and then they fall over on because of their top weight. So you want to be aware of that. Ample light in order to do such, and you don't have to worry about having that issue when it comes to legginess. And there are some plants that are much more vulnerable to legginess even with ample grow lights. Now outside it's different because you got a big ball of heat and sun, you know that, but low energy or low output illumination lights, you have to put them very close to the plant. High output or bright illumination and spectacles of light, red, green, blue, white, you can put them a little higher because they're getting more of what they are needing and they're not stretching to get what they want. All right, next question is...
I want to start indoors.
Okay.
My question is, what do I start indoors?
What not to start indoors? There you go. What should I not start indoors? Well, anything that's roots, carrots, radishes, parsley, or parsnips, anything that roots, potatoes don't start inside, anything like that. What also you don't want to start indoors is I wouldn't recommend cucumbers or squashes or viney crops, because they are going to grow very rapidly, they're going to be very fragile, and whenever you have to take them out to harden them off, acclimating them to outdoor temperature, you're going to have to be very ginger with these plants because they're not just going to kind of grow slowly. We're going to have vines if you start these too early. And you take a cucumber seedling and a cucumber start that you started 4 weeks ago indoors and you've hardened it off and put it outside, in 8 weeks, they're the same size. So green beans are a fast-growing plant. You don't have to start indoors. Really, the list of things to start indoors is actually probably smaller than the list of things you shouldn't start indoors. Corn, don't start indoors. Beets, don't start indoors. Swiss chard.
Squash.
You don't have to. And, mm-hmm. and we've told this story a couple of weeks ago, and we've told it before. You don't have to start anything indoors. You can directly sow everything outdoors at the appropriate time. And in some instances, that's a better way to go because you don't have to worry about grow lights, keeping the plants watered, space, and or if you have critters or small hands that can destroy the plants or damage them or get into them and eat them. You grew up planting everything directly in the ground with no pre-starts at all.
It just blows your mind.
I know, but people may be tuning in for the very first time and not knowing that that is an option.
No, yeah, you can just put those seeds in the ground and... It's a simple method, but it does work, and it's an option. So if you don't want to start seeds, or you're not really sure, or You just don't have time or whatever.
Well, days to harvest. Let's talk about that when it comes to the seeds. Days to harvest. It's not, oh, I planted the tomato inside on March 1st, and it's 87 days to the days of harvest. It's not 87 days from March 1st. It's 87 days from the time you physically put that plant outdoors in a container, grow bag, ground, raised bed. That's when the timer starts. It may have grown indoors for 60 days. That doesn't count. That's plant math, but that's the reality of it. It doesn't count until you actually put it outside for it to start to grow. The seedling, seed to seedling, does not count time unless it's outside in the ground. So you're still going to need the same 87 days to get a tomato, whether you start it for 60 days indoors and then transplant it out. All you're doing is kind of giving it a little of a head start with a healthy plant instead of a seed.
Absolutely correct. So my pepper seedlings have salt, like stains under the leaves. What is that?
Okay. So this is a condition.
It's called edema.
It is caused by overwatering.
Yeah. So it can be caused by high relative humidity as well, lack of sunlight. So basically your plants aren't drying out quickly enough and they may suffer from the edema. And if the soil around your plants lacks potassium and calcium, you should consider fertilizing it or one or both nutrients. Sometimes it's just a matter of letting those plants be spaced apart enough so they can dry. If you use less water when hydrating your plants, you could hopefully take care of that problem.
Now, some instances, those leaves in which have that salty deposit underneath them, they will fall off. New leaves will grow. This is just a plant telling you, hey, too much water. Need to back off. That's most likely the primary cause of this. Again, like you talked about, there's other potential issues, but the overwatering, most times we think a little is good. Let's really soak them. And that actually does more damage to any plant is overwatering. And in a container, you're flushing out nutrient that the plant needs, that fertilizer, that nitrogen, phosphate, potassium, micronutrients, and all those things is not good by flushing that out.
Yeah, you definitely want to be aware of how much you're watering, especially seedlings. It's easy to overwater seedlings. It's very easy to overwater
seedlings. They're a baby.
They're basically a baby, yeah. So you want to keep that in mind. If you do feel that you need kind of some better self-control with watering seedlings, you could always get something like a spray bottle. Don't water the plants, but that way when you're watering the soil below your seedlings, you have a little bit better control as opposed to just like dumping water on them. So a spray bottle is helpful, or like a pump sprayer. Otherwise, you could even make sure that you measure it if you need to for each plant. This seems extreme, but if it's something where it becomes
there's some
a
people
problem.
That would enjoy doing that.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
A third of a cup, a third of a cup.
Yeah.
And you want the soil to be damp. You don't want to water and see the water gushing out of the bottom of a 3-inch pot. If the soil is moist, the soil is hydrated.
And it's helpful to kind of know your climate in your home or wherever you're growing these. It has been a little bit more humid this year, it seems like, for the time of year. So maybe you don't need to water as much. But if you have if you live in a drier climate, maybe you do need to water more. And that's something to consider.
Bottom watering.
Yeah.
Bottom watering is a procedure in which you plant, you put your cups or your starter tray into a 10 by 20 flat. And all of these containers have holes, like the Rootmaker grow trays. You water, you put about an inch of water throughout that 10 by 20 flat that the plants are setting in the trays in, and capillary action wicks the water up into the cells and hydrates the cells from the bottom up. You do that for an hour. After that hour, then you drain off the excess water that's still setting in your tray, and that will give the correct amount of water in each cell. You do this a couple times a week. You'll get a routine. You'll know when it needs to be watered, but that's a way of not overwatering. You're allowing the soil to say, I've got enough water. Drain the rest of this off, because otherwise it will turn into a bog and your plants will suffocate because they're not getting the oxygen in the roots and in the soil that is needed.
Absolutely. So for folks that use 5-gallon buckets as plant containers, obviously the buckets need to drain holes in them. Do you drain the holes like on the bottom?
Drill the
or
holes.
The side? Drill the holes.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Drill the holes. Do you drill the holes like on the bottom or the side of the bucket?
We all by default would drill the holes in the bottom, 5 or 6 holes to get the water to drain out. However, that is not the most good thing for the plant, I guess. What you would want to do is go up about 2 inches around the bottom of the bucket, so on the side, and drill about 4 holes around the perimeter, 2 inches up. What that is going to do is it's going to allow a water reservoir. You're going to fill the thing with soil, but when there's too much water in the bucket, then holes on the side will act as an overflow mechanism to allow that excess water to drain out. Though you still have 1 inch or 2 inches of water below those holes, that when the soil above it requires moisture, we talked about it with the seed trays, in that bucket, that capillary action, that water that's setting at the bottom of the bucket will wick back up and actually feed and hydrate the plant to the point where potentially could save the plant if you forget to water a day or two, that it's not all draining out the bottom and you have no reserve whatsoever. So with that being said, Holly, what did we learn today?
You know, I kind of knew this, but I learned even more that there's really a lot of correlation between the Bible and growing, planting, gardening, etc. And definitely something you don't think about all the time.
What I learned today was that Texas, at least some growers, only grow in the spring and the fall because the summer temperatures are too extreme to grow during the summer, where most of us who are listening, that's our prime growing time. What we learned today is brought to you by Honey Bee Healthy.
Whether you're a gardener, a bee hobbyist, or a professional beekeeper, Honey Bee Healthy Inc. has the products to help you maintain a healthy hive and thriving garden. For more information on how to use Honey Bee Healthy in your garden, visit honeybeehealthy.com. That's honey, the letter B, healthy.com.